It's a slang in Texas. How do you do, Modi? So, you know, I think we all liked it, so we just kept it Howdy Modi.
India's Prime Minister is visiting Houston. It's Tuesday, September 17th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're glad to have you with us, and you'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, help for Rohingya flood victims. Iran detains Australian bloggers. Pork tariffs a rising concern. Collecting sneakers. And the car tech of tomorrow, today. It's all on today's VOA Asia. 6 weeks after the Indian government imposed a partial clampdown in Kashmir, the Supreme Court directed authorities to make the very best endeavor to return normal life to the disputed Himalayan region. Judges also asked the Indian government to ensure smooth functioning of schools, hospitals, and public transport. The Supreme Court did not order the government to take specific actions to address the crisis. India imposed a security lockdown and a communication restriction on the rest of region on August 5th after scrapping its partial autonomy and bringing it directly under New Delhi's control. Since then, some curbs have been eased and most landlines have been restored. But the Kashmir Valley continues to be largely shuttered and mobile and internet services are still blocked. Although schools have opened, most students are not attending classes. An estimated 1,000 people, including regional political leaders, are in detention. The court's ruling came in response to petitioners who have challenged the restrictions in the state, calling them draconian. Meanwhile, President Trump will travel to Houston, Texas on Sunday to take part with India's prime minister in what's being called Howdy Modi. With over 50,000 free tickets already distributed, the event promises to be the largest such event ever held in the United States for a visiting head of state. VOA Asia's Ira Melman was in Houston last week and spoke with Jugal Mallani, the executive director of the event, before the announcement that the U.S. president would attend. His first question was, why is it being called Howdy Modi?
Well, it named Howdy Modi because, you know, we were just sitting, you know, few of us in a room and discussing what should it name. Someone coined the phrase Howdy Modi and everyone liked it. Just how it became Howdy Modi. It's a slang in Texas. How do you do, Modi? So, you know, I think we all liked it, so we just kept it Howdy Modi.
Who is coming? How many people are coming to view it?
The venue is NRG Stadium. It is one of the largest stadium in Houston, which can hold more than 50,000 people. And so I think when we started registering people, the stadium, we have a full crowd. So more than 50,000 people are going to attend this event. Everyone is going to listen to Prime Minister Modi. That is his charisma, which is bringing all the Indian diaspora on one platform.
And what's the purpose of this?
This is to strengthen our U.S. Indo-American ties. You know, this is a event which we think once we do it, you know, it will carry forward how the relationship between U.S. and India may be in a different level. And also, it is kind of a celebration of Indian diaspora. You know, it's such a big event, all the Indian diaspora coming on one platform. So it's kind of a celebration of Indians in Houston. You know, Houston is the fourth largest city in U.S. and the population of Indians is about 150,000 people. You know, and Indians are in all different areas, including doctors, engineers, business people, CEOs of the companies. So you name it, I think Indians have really flourished in Houston.
Tell me the story, if you could, about you came up with this idea. How did you get in touch and convince the Prime Minister of India to come to Houston before he heads to the UNGA?
Well, when we came to know that he's coming to U.S. for this UNGA meeting, I think the invitations went from different cities, and they narrowed it down to like three cities, Houston, Boston, and Chicago. And, you know, like we all wrote, all the organizations here wrote him a letter inviting him here. So we exactly don't know how the decision was made, but we are happy that he's coming to Houston.
And what do you hope to get out of this?
You know, strengthen the relationship. And, you know, as I said, this is take to a, you know, different level, you know, understand. I think once he visits here, you know, there are a lot of oil and gas industries and other things. Hopefully, you know, something will better will come out of all these things, the meetings.
What is it about Prime Minister Modi that makes him so attractive to so many people? I heard him described as a rock star.
He is a rock star for sure. You know, he is very popular in India as, and also all over the world, because he comes from a very, from a very normal, humble beginnings. And he can understand the peoples who are less fortunate or underprivileged, what are the requirements. So he has done a lot of things in India to improve their lifestyle, you know, and he has given like in a lot of villages there were no toilets. So there were millions of toilets were built. Then he gave, cooking gas was given to free. So a lot of these things have made him very popular by providing the simple benefits to the poor people or underprivileged people.
I have seen there are going to be protests. Any political leader, especially of such a huge country, is going to have people against what he is doing. Are you prepared for that?
You know, it's a democratic country. Everyone has right to protest as long as peaceful, you know, so they can express their voice. And, you know, and I'm sure, you know, it will be there. So I don't think it is our problem. We are going to concentrate on our event. We are all very excited. Our team is working very hard to deliver a flawless event.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Jugo Malani, the executive director of the event. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you make a visit to voanews.com. Analysts say China adopting strategy in response to Hong Kong pro-democracy supporters. China's new transport ship will help fortify islands in disputed sea. North Korea says denuclearization talks possible if threats removed. United Nations says Myanmar is not safe for the return of Rohingya refugees. For separated Koreans, memories fading and time running out. Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The World Food Program has launched its biggest relief operation this year to aid thousands of Rohingya refugees whose worldly possessions have been swept away in the torrential rains that hit Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh this week. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In the space of 24 hours, the World Food Program has delivered food to 16,000 Rohingya refugees who have lost everything in the heavy rains that have wreaked havoc in the camps. The agency reports it also has provided food aid to more than 800 people from the host community displaced by the flooding. Bangladesh is a low-lying country prone to flooding during the monsoon season, which is set to last until October. However, the amount of rain that battered the region in just one day this week is by any measure extreme and devastating. WFP spokesman Heavy Fahusil tells VOA, a colleague on the ground has described the depth of grief experienced by families who have lost the few belongings they have managed to acquire in the camps. More than 700,000 Rohingya refugees have fled violence and persecution in Myanmar since August 2017, many with nothing more than the clothes on their backs.
The family lost everything because all was in the house was basically washed away. What they use as a bed or what they use to cook, or everything was basically lost. They have nothing to cook. They have nothing to sleep. Most of the clothes have been lost. Basically, the little thing that they've rebuilt since their wife in the camp was lost in one night of rain.
Monsoons and downpours in Bangladesh have become more erratic and powerful due to climate change. Ferhusel says WFP has been working with the refugees and host communities on disaster risk reduction measures to mitigate the impact of climate-related events. Fearing the worst, he says WFP had pre-positioned food stocks at strategic locations around the camps before the monsoon season began. Therefore, he says, the agency was able to respond quickly to the current emergency. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia news, the first Chinese-born woman to sit in the lower house of Australia's federal parliament is under scrutiny for failing to disclose her membership in organizations linked to China's Communist Party. There are claims Gladys Liu had connections with senior figures in Beijing's covert political propaganda apparatus. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Australia insists its support for the U.S.-led mission to protect tankers in the Persian Gulf is not to blame for the detention of two Australian travel bloggers being held in Iran. They have been identified as Jolie King and Mark Firkin, a couple from Perth. Phil Mercer in Sydney reports King also holds a British passport and was reportedly detained 10 weeks ago near Tehran.
News of the couple's arrest and that of another British-Australian woman emerged Wednesday. The cases aren't thought to be related. The detentions come amid growing tensions between the West and Iran. King and Firkin have been travelling through Asia and the Middle East. They were documenting their adventures to thousands of followers on Instagram and YouTube, including a recent trip through Pakistan.
You might have heard of it before, but the Karakoram was built on the same path as the old Silk Route, so that's pretty cool.
It's reported the couple was arrested in Iran for flying a drone without permission. Videos filmed in other countries do contain drone footage. Their last social media post was on June 30.
We're now in Iran and we are camped on a nice hill here next to the capital, Tehran.
Tehran, we just arrived. Actually really beautiful.
Just in time for sunset?
Yeah.
A second dual British-Australian national, reported to have been jailed for 10 years on unknown charges, is understood to be an academic from Melbourne. There is speculation the woman who hasn't been publicly identified could have been convicted by Iran of spying. In August, Canberra said it would send a warship and surveillance aircraft to the Persian Gulf to join an international effort to combat Iran's actions in the Strait of Hormuz, one of the world's most important shipping lanes. The Australian Foreign Minister Maurice Payne doesn't believe the detentions are linked to that decision or to other political reasons.
We have no reason to think that these arrests are connected to international concern over Iran's nuclear program, United Nations sanctions or sanctions enforcement, or maritime security and the safety of civilian shipping.
Australia is advising its citizens and those with dual nationality to reconsider their need to travel to Iran due to the risk that foreigners could be randomly detained. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, plump pork demand and cost. You're listening to VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia, the Solomon Islands switched diplomatic recognition from Taiwan to China on Monday, becoming the latest country to leave the dwindling Taiwanese camp. Taiwan's foreign ministry confirmed the move. There was no immediate confirmation from the Solomon Islands. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, China has announced a tariff exemption on U.S.-produced pork, withdrawing duties as high as 72%, one of many tariffs Beijing imposed on American agricultural products amid a protracted trade war with Washington. As VOA's Kane Faribault reports from the Midwestern state of Illinois, farmers feel the economic pinch, even as China's need to import pork is growing.
There isn't much Thomas Titus doesn't do on his farm in Elkhart, Illinois, but lately, he isn't making a lot of money doing any of it.
We're producing corn and we're producing soybeans at below cost of production almost. We're raising pigs at below cost of production. So when you begin to think about that, we're in a challenging time whenever we get to the end of the year and we have to shore up some of those books.
It's not unusual for farmers to diversify their products, but Titus says his pork operation isn't typical.
We're somewhat of a rarity given our size and how we raise pigs from birth up until market weight. And so, I mean, our size and kind of what we do is a little bit more dynamic and diverse.
In total, Titus raises about 12,000 pigs a year, many sent to the international market.
One in every four pigs that we raise goes to a foreign country of some kind. And so we are extremely dependent upon those positive trade negotiations and trade agreements.
One key buyer of U.S. pork is the world's largest importer, China, which is dealing with a major outbreak of Asian swine fever that has reduced the country's pig population by an estimated 20%. At a time that country urgently needs it the most, importing American pork was more expensive than from other sources due to steep tariffs the Chinese government imposed in an escalating trade war with Washington. While American pork is now to be exempted from those tariffs, the trade war had already taken a steep toll.
We've lost about $1 billion worth of pork sales, or what Iowa State University has put out a study, $8 per hog is what it's cost us on the tariffs.
Carl Setzer is a commodity risk analyst with AgriVisor.
China doesn't like to marry themselves to one commodity supplier, be it pork, beef, soybeans, whatever it is.
So when tariffs boosted the price of American pork, China turned increasingly to other suppliers, such as the European Union and Brazil.
Brazil has seen their trade jump 5% in the last year. The trade war isn't helping us at all. We would likely have a bigger share because we're a bigger pork producer, but it comes down to value and what we're willing to sell our pork for.
It's unclear how much China will increase purchases now that certain tariffs, including those on pork and soybeans, have been removed. Thomas Titus, like many farmers, has taken financial hits on almost everything produced on his farm during the trade war. Even so, he still supports President Trump, who has taken a tough stance on China's trade practices. At the same time, Titus would like to see fewer presidential tweets on the subject.
It takes three tweets and this market just takes a crash.
Which is why Titus hopes upcoming face-to-face negotiations between the United States and China produce tangible, long-term results, creating some stability for commodity markets and ultimately his bottom line. Kane Faribault, VOA News, Elkhart, Illinois.
This news break from VOA Asia, Indonesian authorities have arrested 185 people suspected of starting forest fires that are spreading a thick, noxious haze around Southeast Asia, according to police. A national police spokesman said the suspects were arrested in six provinces that have declared a state of emergency over forest fires. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now in VOA Asia, there was a time not too long ago when sneakers were just another kind of footwear, usually worn for sports. Now some popular sneaker models are seen as collectibles. Even used sneakers can be bought and sold like precious commodities. Saqibul Islam visited SneakerCon DC, an annual gathering in Washington where so-called sneakerheads gather to buy, sell, and talk about their favorite shoes.
Florida student Matthew Carbolo just bought a 10-year-old used pair of sneakers for a steep price, but he's happy that he made a good deal.
These are Flint 13s, just a Jordan colorway, a really popular colorway from back in the day. It's pretty hard to find them clean nowadays, especially with the original box.
Matthew says he has people in Florida who will pay a good price for a shoe like this. Thanks to Michael Jordan's illustrious career on and off the basketball court, many of his signature shoes are famous among many young sneakerheads, a term used for sneaker enthusiasts.
A sneakerhead is someone that is very passionate about
the whole world of sneakers. What are the styles associated with that shoe? What are the shirts? What is the clothing, the hoodies, all of the different elements?
For most sneakerheads, picking a pair of sneakers is an important decision. And that's where SneakerCon comes into play as a big hub, more than a traditional shoe store or online shopping.
And you can negotiate your price, or you can just find something for a better price than you can find online.
Created in 2009, SneakerCon draws sneaker enthusiasts from all over the United States and around the world to buy, sell, and trade rare and in-demand sneakers. At a convention like this one, recently in Washington, there are hundreds of vendors, thousands upon thousands of pairs of sneakers, and millions of dollars in transactions at one spot.
Buying and selling is definitely one of the key components to this whole world of sneakers. But really, it's a culture and community. It's not random people buying and selling. It's people that are most knowledgeable about sneaker culture.
The only place you see the actual community of sneakers.
12-year-old Jonah says the first step before buying is to get your shoe legitimized by using SneakerCon's authenticity program and legit certified tags, which is free for all.
Once we get a shoe, we study it, we take it apart, we look at the packaging, we take a look at the very small details, and based off our knowledge, we'll give an opinion.
Mostly people come here to browse, and many for the convenience of buying, selling, and trading.
You don't have to really wait on a shoe, or you don't really have to wait on the money. It's just immediately just trade it off.
Co-founder Alan Vinogradov says it's all about sneaker culture, which drives the commerce in this convention. Saqib Ul Islam, VOA News, Washington.
Car makers unveiled self-driving vehicles and assurances of an eco-friendly future in transportation. Thousands of climate activists blocking the streets in Frankfurt, though, are not buying it. VOA's Arash Arabasadi looks at the future through a lens of the present.
Congestion grinds traffic to a halt in Frankfurt, Germany.
We must move away from individual transport to public transport. We must move away from this bigger, faster, further, and more to the public good.
As many as 15,000 activists came here to protest.
Electric cars only make sense if the power comes from renewable energy. We need a fast coal phase-out, in addition to electric cars and a change in transportation habits.
Drawing crowds of protesters to Frankfurt is the 2019 International Motor Show, where car makers boast of new driver and traffic-friendly vehicles, some looking to change the way we send and receive packages.
We are also talking to them, the big e-commerce companies, because they also look for new solutions. They look for a more efficient one, for a cheaper one, and also for a more sustainable one.
This pedal-driven delivery truck boasts zero emissions outside of the driver exhaling.
In Berlin, the average speed of cars is 16 kilometers per hour. Because you're stuck in traffic, you need to look for a parking spot. So we are actually faster than a car in a city because you can skip the traffic jam and we are much easier to find a parking spot.
Makers of this driverless van say it may help ease traffic congestion and boost productivity.
So whenever I don't have to bother about the traffic, I don't have to bother about, like, you know, what is happening around me, I can take my time. For example, if I'm going to a meeting, prepare for my meeting over here, I would have just some teleconference over here, or I can just go ahead, lean back, and enjoy and relax.
Using augmented reality, like the famous Pokemon Go game from a few years ago, a company called V-Sight helps drivers get back on the road after car troubles slow them down.
Companies are losing too much time and effort when they have a problem on the field, and every minute counts for them. Actually, some of them are losing 20,000 euros per minute. So we help them to recover very fast from those malfunctions and problems on their field.
The thousands protesting outside say none of this sounds like it will do much to curb climate change.
I think this is just a shift of the problem, but not a real approach to tackling the future of transport. And to have less cars on the road to organize traffic more sustainably with trains, on foot with bicycles, and public transport.
The International Motor Show runs until September 22nd. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on the radio on many great stations throughout the region, like Chiang Mai University, Radio FM 100 at Chiang Mai University in Thailand. We thank everyone there who's tuned into our program today, and we invite you back for more. Come back again tomorrow for more VOA Asia. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Greg Burns, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, Kelly Jean Kelly. And thanks, too, to Michelle Liu, who got our program streaming today on Facebook. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.